The date is December 2nd, 1975, and this is James Mann Russell of the Oral History Department. And today we're interviewing former mayor of Warren, Mr. Robert Dunston. And Mr. Dunston, could you tell us a little bit about you when you first came to Warren?
I came to Warren in 1956. I came here from Lubbock, Texas, where I had been in the insurance business, and my family had moved back to Warren. My wife was originally from here, and through a chain of circumstances, I sold my business in Texas and came here in 1956.
What different occupations have you held?
Well, the only thing that I've really done outside of being mayor is that I've been in the insurance business, in both the life and the general insurance business. I was in the insurance business part-time while I was going to college at Texas Christian University. And when I finished at TCU, I was already making a good living as an insurance man, so I never practiced my profession as an engineer. And I've been in the insurance business all of my life, all of my adult life, until I ran for mayor. And while being elected a mayor, well, this was the only other thing that I've ever done.
Tell us a little bit about your family.
Well, I have been married and divorced. I have, you might say, two families. I have a son who's a graduate of Purdue University from my first marriage, and then I have two adopted boys from this second marriage. My wife and I neither had any children, and we adopted an 8-year-old from Trumbull County Children's Home, and then a year later we adopted another one. So we have two boys who are now 14 and 15 years of age.
When did you first aspire to get involved in politics?
Well, I don't think I really ever aspired to it. It was sort of a chain of circumstances, or you might say the leadership of the Holy Spirit. I belonged to a Christian group when I first came to town here, and we were quite disturbed about what was happening in Warren, and for those of your classmates who are old enough or their parents will remember that we had quite a scandal here in about 1960 in bribes and payoffs and so forth, and we were quite disturbed as a Christian group, a group of Christian businessmen. We were concerned with what was happening in our community, and one morning during a prayer meeting, we always got together for prayer and a little bit of Bible study on every Thursday morning, and we were doing this since 1956. And what someone said, we ought to run one of our own people for mayor, and I happened to be out of that group of five men. I was the only one who had ever had anything to do with politics, and I had been a Republican precinct committeeman in Texas, and that's when a Republican was a dirty name in Texas. If you weren't a Democrat, why, they didn't even know you existed. But I had been a Republican precinct committeeman, and probably the reason I was is because that I felt that the ideals that they stood for were much better than the socialistic programs of the Democrat Party. And so I became involved in it in Texas. And so when this question came up from that little Bible study group, I was the only one who really had anything to do with politics, plus the fact that former Mayor Bill Burbank had asked me to be his kickoff speaker for what became his last campaign, and so I was the only one who had even had a remote association with anything political. So out of that meeting, after prayer, we decided that I would run for mayor, and I was literally an unknown, and to run for an office like that when you're an unknown is not an easy task. But I, in the 5 years that I had been in the community, I had been active in many civic affairs, and so I was really, in a sense, not unknown, particularly from the business world. And the civic clubs, I had been the Optimist Man of the Year, and I had been active in my church, and I had been active in the Chamber of Commerce and some of the other things. I was on the board of a couple of associations, on the hospital board and some other things, Boy Scouts and some things like that that would help me to be known. But I recall very emphatically the day that I went to the newspaper and told them that I was going to file for the office of mayor. They had known me at the newspaper because I had handled publicity for a number of the organizations of which I was associated. And I remember the editor of the newspaper never even looking up from what he was doing and saying, "Bob, you'll never make it." And I was sort of astounded, and he said, "You'll never make it without an issue. And the scripture says that out of your body shall flow rivers of living water." And I, without even giving it a thought, I said, "Well, praise God, Stan, I don't know what the issue is going to be, but I'm going to be the next mayor." And surely I was. I was elected.
You mentioned you were displeased with the bribes and stuff in government. Was this, are you referring to the sewer scandal?
Yes, this was the sewer scandal of 1959, 60, and 61.
Well, like I was going back to the former papers, and according to the papers, like nothing seemed to have broke until like right before the election.
That's right, we broke it.
Well, the most people in the community, the way I assume then, you knew like the stuff was going on before.
Well, we assumed that it was, and we began to do some research work on it, and the grand jury was appointed, and on the grand jury, the head of the grand jury was a man who later became a county commissioner, and a Republican, and we were able to dig up enough to make it worthwhile for the grand jury to get in and investigate, in which they did. And then, of course, there were some convictions. And I really think there should have been perhaps some people of the Republican Party go to jail, too.
Oh, really?
But I had no basis for that, only assumptions on my own part. But certainly they did prosecute a number of them. The chairman of the Democrat Party and three councilmen went to the penitentiary. But I'm not so sure that that was all that should have gone.
That was one of my questions.
I think that perhaps there were others, but either we lost the momentum and we were not able to push it farther, or something that happened, of course, grind out rather slowly. Nevertheless, the grand jury seemed to be satisfied that they had enough, and that's all that there was.
Because from reading the papers, I had no idea that your organization and that were behind it. I thought it was just a thing that just broke when they stopped construction of the sewer.
No, it's I have a strong feeling that that the Lord had something to do with it. We needed an issue. An unknown could have never been elected, and we needed an issue, and we were so unorthodox in our political maneuvering and everything that among our own party, I remember the chairman of my party coming into my office on a number of occasions and just insisting that I have a campaign manager, and we had made an agreement that we would not have a campaign manager unless we acquired one who was a Christian. And if we didn't find one, why we'd just do without. And we did without. We went all the way through the campaign without a campaign manager as such.
There's not many people that are elected under those circumstances.
No. And it was rather interesting. And then, of course, when it came up to the time for re-election, and I felt that we had been doing such a good job, even though the newspaper was against me, and they were supposedly Republican-oriented, but I felt that we had been doing such a good job and that the people would recognize it and reward us. And so I kept on working at my job as mayor and didn't do too much about politicking the second time around. Of course, I lost by about 1,200 votes.
Is that why you think you lost, because you were so involved in your work?
Well, I think so. I think that if I'd been doing like most politicians do, tend to the store, why, I think I probably could have been elected. There are some mistakes that we made. If I had openly taken on the newspaper, I think I would have had the backing of the people. I let the people and the newspapers used their innuendos and half-truths and figuring that the people would know, but this is a favorite pastime of the so-called Fourth Estate. They do this constantly.
If the newspaper was Republican oriented, why were they against you?
Well, they were against me for a couple of reasons. I'd rather not like to go into in detail, but some of my projects were contrary to their desires. And very often these people hold themselves up as benefactors of the public and so forth, but in many instances they have an axe of their own to grind.
During the sewer scandal, I was amazed to read when I read the papers that the councilman even attempted to solicit money from two different corporations.
Yes.
And I could not see how they intended to award the contracts to both of them. It just seemed like their logic was
Well, I don't think they had any logic, really. Everything was, it's sort of what happened, and it's a little bit of an insight of what's happened to America today. You see, the wrong gets to be so acceptable that it's no longer wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of the problems I have often said in both political and civic speeches, that the great evil in America today, the great sin in America today is innuendo and half-truth. And this becomes an accepted way of life. One has to pay more than the insurance is worth in order to get the insurance, or one has to pay back 10% in doing business with someone else in order that they get another contract. This is the accepted, apparently this accepted way of living today. This is what was Mr. Nixon's downfall. It's the greed of man, and of course this is prophetic, and when we talk about these things, well, people laugh at us, but the Bible talks about it much in the last days. There will be much of this, and the things that we accept today, not only among business, but among the young people, and our moral standards and everything else, as short a time as 10 years ago, they would not have been accepted. Who would ever think that a president of the United States would be going to China and not even the chief officer of the state come to recognize him as he comes. And this is the low spot to which we've fallen.
The sewer scandal, they even threatened the lives of those
sure.
guys.
Oh yeah, the only time I ever had my life threatened when I was in public office was when I found that certain people were operating a gambling house in the city of Warren just after I was elected. And when I found out who was running it, this person was a high person in my party, and he was in line with some high police officers. And when I found out that they were running it, I called them to my office and told them that I'd give them 2 hours to get it closed or they'd both be in jail. And so then right after that, I called for a meeting of the police department, the entire police department. That night when we called for the meeting, we called it the change of shift at the 3 o'clock shift in the afternoon, and we left one car on the street and one dispatcher on the radio. We wanted everybody to be there because I wanted to tell those police officers right straight from the horse's mouth that we wouldn't tolerate any kind of foolishness. And you recall in the headlines that you were looking back in, the next day after that, there was a big headline, Mayor Says I'm the Boss. And I told those police officers, I said that nothing goes in this town, the vernacular of the street, this is the way they talk, nothing goes. Nothing goes in this town. I'm the mayor, I'm the boss, and I'll tell you if anything goes. Don't you believe your police captain or your partner or your chief or anyone else, if he tells you to close your eyes to something, don't you do it. Because if I find out about it, you and he both will go to jail. I'm the boss and nothing goes in this town. The next day, after that headline came out in the newspaper, I was sitting in the office, in the mayor's office, around 6 o'clock in the evening, waiting to go on the banquet tour. And someone called me, and this person had called me once before, and I had to put much stock to it, and this time I recognized the voice, and I wasn't nearly as fearful as I had been the first time. And the man said to me, Mary, he says, you don't listen very well. And I recognized the voice, and I said to him, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're talking about. And he said, you know what I'm talking about. We told you you'd end up in the river if you didn't lay off. And I remember very vividly saying to this man, friend, I don't swim very well with sandbags around my neck. And you could hear the silence out on the end of the phone, and the man finally said to me, you really are nuts. And I said, no, my friend, I'm not nuts. Neither am I afraid to die. For me to live is Christ, and to die is gain. And the guy hung up the phone, and I never heard from them again. Nor did I, to the best of my knowledge, ever have any trouble like that again. But I think that they honored my apparent sincerity that nothing was going to go.
If you have Christ, you have nothing to fear.
That's right.
Do you believe that, well, you don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but do you believe that if, like you said, you felt that maybe not everybody involved in the sewer scandal was, you know, found guilty or anything, do you believe the former mayor had anything to do with it?
No, I don't. I think he was used. I think he was used. I think he was in a position where his friends perhaps were doing things that he didn't know about.
referring to the same thing, I was shocked after I was reading the papers that Frank Ciccelli, who was the head of the Democratic Party, was sort of the ringleader of all this. After he was already indicted, the Democrats held their annual meeting, and he was elected unanimously to re-elect as chairman.
Not only that, but they also elected a councilman at large. They also elected a councilman at large, that is, through the primaries, one of the indicted men.
The one guy almost won re-election. He's already indicted a little bit. He lost by like 100 votes or something.
Yeah, he almost beat the Republican at the general election.
I can't understand it.
It's pathetic. Well, it was the same way. The man that beat me for public office had been safety service director in the city of Warren when there was a slot machine on every corner.
Okay.
And secondly, he had been involved in a scandal which was a public record in the post office department where they gave him the opportunity to resign as postmaster, resign or go to the penitentiary. And yet he was elected in public office over and above my record and my character and my ability.
I didn't know that about him. When was this?
Just prior to, three or four years prior to that, when Mr. Dennison was in Congress, they brought the charges against him.
People have kind of done.
Well, people just don't think. And like I say, it's the same thing 10 years ago. Or 15 years ago, a divorced man would have no chance of running for public office. Now, today, it matters not. And so these are the way the times have changed, that people don't look on the things of moral principle as being essential today.
Mm-hmm. My father's also told me about like a lot of the stuff that happened in the 40s and the 50s, and the one mayor I was trying to interview is living off of what he took out of the office from the board peacefully. Anyway, when you campaigned in 61, you said that we didn't have a lack of continued program for policemen or something like this.
Yes.
And what did you exactly mean? Was this accomplished?
Well, they had never had a training program for policemen, and I tried to upbuild. I maintained, and I still maintain, that one of the best public relations, probably the best public relations group for any community is the police department. And I maintain that if we wanted to have a good police department, we had to have a well-trained police department. And we established the first school for policemen. And this didn't mean just for new policemen, this meant for all of them. And we went and searched and we found an outfit up in Toledo, Ohio, and we brought them in here and we trained our policemen. We also were the first to give our policemen clothing allowance. It used to irritate me as I'd go about my business downtown to see some policeman nonchalantly leaning against the building, the Union Savings and Trust or something, building downtown, with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth and red socks on, and so out of uniform that it certainly was a disgrace to the city rather than a good public image. And so we provided for the first clothing allowance for our policemen so that we could put them in good serviceable uniforms and all alike and make them look like something and give them some pride and to where today we have as fine a police department in the city of Warren as any community in America. We have our problems just like any of the rest of them, but we have a fine police department. And
I'm personally skeptic of all these charges of police brutality that's going on because
that's foolishness.
Throughout the country even it's
that's happening. Absolute foolishness. It's the same thing like so many criminals yell, you're mistreating me and so forth. There was an excellent article in the Youngstown Vindicator in the letters to the editor last Sunday relative to Sheriff Ray Davis and his jail. And they were saying how filthy the jail was. Well, who made the jail filthy? The inmates who were in there. You see, and we forget the criminal and blame the law officer. You see, because they yell the loudest. There's an old adage that says the squeaking wheel gets the most care and attention. And this is what happens. And so we get all riled up and we want to defend the poor and the down and the out. Why was he in jail in the first place? It wasn't because he obeyed the law. And you see, we've just twisted our values in America today. The Patty Hearst and all the rest, they can say, well, I had bad parents, or my parents didn't care for me, or I was concerned because these people were oppressed, so I got me a machine gun and I mowed some of them down. Or people say we love everybody, that's why we want to do these, and they're not even good Robin Hoods. At least Robin Hood, when he robbed somebody, he took it and gave it to the poor. I'm not advocating this, but I'm trying to point out how false the doctrine is of many of our people.
And to show what you mean, like in the sewer scandal, most of those guys were out within a couple of years.
Oh yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
If I did something like that, and I was I'm a nobody,
you'd be in for life.
Mm-hmm. And it lost like that Youngstown incident with that patrolman at that football field.
Yeah.
Then the parents and the teachers get together and say,
sure,
we don't want any more police protection.
Yeah.
They're cutting their own throats.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And, you created a committee of ethics.
Yes.
Why did you do that, and was it a success?
No, it wasn't too much of a success because the people, unfortunately, something like this dies out. The need for it dies out, you see. I think somebody way back in history has said this, that the world will struggle to attain something, and then after it attained, it gets fat and complacent, and then it falls back in the same cycle again. And this is what happens, and so people cry for reform, and then you give them reform, and then they go right back into the same cycle again. So, in a sense, it did its job at that particular time, and the people whom I appointed on it did a good job of it. But again, you have to be able to look at and be able to see a little bit below the surface. There are so many people and so many of the do-gooders with axes to grind and so forth like this, and they can tell you that they're interested in you and interested in the general public, but when it gets down to the real nut-cracking, we're all basically selfish. And oftentimes, what we're saying is not what we really mean. And I think this happens, so you'll have the cry for reform. Then after you get the reform, everybody sits back and says, well, now it's done. But it isn't. You see, evil has a ability to recognize that sooner or later things will quiet down. And so they lay back and lay dead for a while until they can rise again.
Did you say the same thing was true for your obscene literature before?
I think so. I think that times were a little bit different than they are now. You see, the things that we were fighting against are accepted now.
Also, Warren, you
But we had no problem with the obscene literature. As I recall, the two main stores that were selling it, we went to them and told them that we would not put up with it. And they agreed to remove it from their shelves, and we had no problem with it. But you have a different problem today. You have the X-rated movies and everything else that, as I say, now are accepted. They've been able to go to court and win it. So your children and my children are subjected to this sort of thing.
You're talking about television?
Yes, that's right.
You supported the one-way traffic system.
I built the one-way traffic system. And I also built the markings on the streets. We had no markings on the streets, such as you're aware of today. We did this. We brought it. I had served on a traffic commission in the state of Texas, in a very forward city. We had hired consultants who recommended those same things which I did here. The newspaper was against the one-way traffic, and they incited certain other people who had access to grind. One-way traffic would have benefited our community. It still would ease some of the problems that the merchants have downtown, but they were, too many of them were too interested in themselves to really be concerned about moving that traffic through the community.
Didn't the merchants then complain it was hurting their business or something?
Yes, they did, but none of them could prove it. None of them, nor would they let it test. But the merchants were not the main one. The newspaper was against it. The owners of the newspaper were against it.
Why were they against it?
Because they had to drive a couple of extra blocks to get to the office, one of them said.
Because from what I read, didn't it help control accidents?
Sure.
Accidents and stuff like this?
It's inevitable. I tried to tell them how many cars there would be on the streets by 1970. By 1980, and how congested those streets would be, and they wouldn't listen. I also wanted to change. I wanted to build overpasses and underpasses over South Street. They accused me of building a bridge to nowhere. We built a South Street bridge. I said, told the councilman, I said, build the four-lane bridge and we'll build the road. The people of Israel never would have reached the promised land had they not put their feet in the water first. But the newspaper was against building the overpasses and the underpasses, because again it would have infringed on some of their rights. And now we still have the congestion every time a train is moving through town. The traffic is backed up clear across South Street and Market Street, just as it always was. So we spent $250,000 in those days to move tracks 250 feet, which was absolutely useless.
When did the one-way system go out of?
As soon as they got me out of office.
Really?
Yes. That was one of the promises, the deals that were made.
What effect did at that time the Cuban Missile Crisis have on this area? Like, were the people really in fear of a war?
I don't think so. I don't think it did. I've always thought that that was a farce, and that Mr. Kennedy, this was one of his blunders, giving in and failing to support what we had said we were going to do. This was the start of the downfall of this nation of ours, when the other people learned that we would not live up to our word. Whereas always in the years past, we had had courageous leaders who would live up to their word. Even Mr. Truman, whom I had no great love for, but has since grown to where he is in high esteem in my thinking. At least Mr. Truman had enough guts to do what he believed in. And to me, as a politician, this is important. Not to do what somebody else believes or what the pressure groups want you to do. I can always remember Mr. Truman saying it, that if you can't stand the heat, get the hell out of the kitchen.
In 62 also, this has nothing to do with your mayor administration, but happened in Warren at that time. There was a lot of scandal among the Democratic County Commissioners about this county home thing. And what really went on there?
Well, they're both parties were involved in that, I believe.
Both of them?
I believe both parties. I don't know exactly too much what happened through the grand jury, and I think it was soft-soaked a little bit, but I understand there were some cattle passing back and forth between the county home and the home of another high Democrat official, which was adjacent to the county property.
Were there really mistreatment of the children in there, as they claim? Were they using it as an excuse?
Well, I think that you always have in county homes and children's homes and things like that, you always have some mistreatment because the educational requirements and the salary requirements are so low for the people who take those kind of jobs. That unless you have a super dedicated person, you're going to have this type of person who will mistreat someone else.
Because from what I read, the county commissioners were using that more as an excuse to get who they wanted in their positions. from what I read, weren't you able to cut drastically the cost of installing the sewer system by maintaining the same quality? How was this?
Oh, yes. We cut costs tremendously. We cut all the fat out of it. And I got myself in problems with the city employees and all because I believed that if a man were paid for 8 hours work, he should work 8 hours. And that if he was paid for 8 hours and he only worked four and he accepted his pay for those 8 hours, he was stealing. And I told the employees this, and I tried to set up regular work schedules where they were not accustomed to this. And plus the fact all the people that were doing business with the city of Warren, they were able to cut their price down and their bid prices down because they knew that they didn't have to pass anything on to anyone else.
This was a sort of pay scale.
Yes, and then it was the same way in the pay scale that we took and we tried to bring the city employees up to a livable wage, and we tried to job rate the jobs. We wanted to provide a nucleus of people who would be loyal to the community and who would give it a good day's work for a good day's pay.
I noticed during this, the policemen and the firemen, especially the firemen, were complaining that they wanted higher wages. They were only like 16th on the list and all this. I mean, were they underpaid?
Those figures are always, you can take figures, and firemen's group and policemen's groups are very famous for doing this. They can take figures and adapt them and make them do almost anything they want them to do. Right now, and even in those days, we were as well paid as many cities our size. And of course, we came in, we were one of the first ones to come in, communities in Ohio to come in with clothing allowances and all of these things, and benefits for them. And you take right now, I don't know how they would judge our pay scale with those of other cities, but this is a common way. They come to a city council and they say, here, we're the lowest of 16 cities that they chose, and then those other 16 cities, they take it back to their councils and do the same thing, so it's an endless vicious circle. Our firemen and policemen today, I believe the minimum starting wage for a fireman is somewhere around $8,500 or $9,000 a year, in the same way with a policeman. And I think that the firemen have a very unfair hold on any city. Fireman lobby is the biggest lobby that a mayor and an administration has to contend with. They have the easiest in much sense. Every once in a while, some of them will get killed. Of course, it's a hazardous occupation, but some people get killed just driving down the street, too. But the firemen in this community work 24 hours on and 48 off. And I have a friend right now who, by the accumulation of 8 days, is able to take off and have vacation clear until the 21st day of December, right now.
So they have a lot of
and if they would ever tell you the true picture, and they complain about school teachers only working 9 months out of the year, they work much less than that. They work 1 day out of every three. And yet they're the biggest complainers that the city administration has to put up. And this is true all over the country. Is only true here.
I always felt if firemen, had to work, I think you mentioned they have a lot of vacations and stuff. If they had to work like 6 days a week or something, you believe then their salary should be higher?
Yes, I believe their salary is high enough right now to work 40-hour a week. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're the same. Their pay scale is about the same as the policeman, and the policeman has to work 5 8-hour days.
I tried to
put the firemen. One of my goals was to put the firemen on a 40-hour week.
Because I've always felt people that risk their lives really should not really get real high salaries. How important was it for Warren to have additional fire spaces, which I think you've got in?
I built two of them. It was absolute necessity. The one over there on Parkman Road, there was no way to get from downtown to Parkman Road if the trains were blocking the Todd Avenue into St. Joseph's Hospital, for instance. It was an absolute necessity. Also over on Palmyra Road, we built a new one over there. It was a necessity. Now, with the advent of those fire stations, they can get to, city fire department can get to any place in the city within 2.5 minutes. And I felt that this would save lives.
Did you have a good rapport with council during your administration?
Very good, yes. I practically ran the council. Mr. Joe was president of council, but...
I've already had your attention.
Another one of these guys that lived on that. This is off the red line.
While you were in mayor, I noticed, this is more personal, just there was a big controversy between the Warren churches against Reverend McIntyre. And Reverend McIntyre even came here to try and answer their things and all this, you know. And then they wanted him off WHHH, and WHHH didn't. And then WHHH eventually did take him off.
I had some interesting experiences relative to that case. Number one, I was a Methodist at that time, and I was very active in the First Methodist Church. And the young man whom they used to throw the snowballs that the National Council of Churches made, and this Warren Ministerial Association made, the young man was the assistant pastor at the Methodist Church. And they were all down on McIntyre and everything, and I've always been a supporter somewhat. At that time I wasn't, but I have since then been a supporter of Carl McIntyre because of his willingness to stick his neck out for what he believes. And when they called for, the Ministerial Association called for the local radio station to abandon Mr. McIntyre's program, and Mr. McIntyre offered to come down here and debate with him, or come down and present his views firsthand so that they didn't have to use innuendo and half-truth. And I remember very vividly the time that he came to the music hall, and I, as the mayor, was to go there and bring him greetings from the city and welcome him to the city. And one of the local liberal clergymen who was still here in this town used language unbecoming a preacher in talking about me because I would stand on the same platform with Carl McIntyre. But I said to this pastor, that you have never complained when I went and sat on the platform with the Tavern Owners Association or the Liquor Dealers Association. And yet here is a man who is trying to uphold the Christian principles and trying to uphold the principles of America. And you would fight him. And I had some flack from the other extreme too, from the people who brought him here. I recall very vividly that night that he was to speak that I was running a little bit late. And as I came into the music hall, it was already packed prior to the start of the meeting. And the participants in the program were lined up backstage, and I came in late, and they were waiting on me before they pulled the curtain and so forth. And one fellow met me at the door and said, I want to introduce you to Dr. McIntyre. And I said, hi, Dr. McIntyre, I'm Bob Dunst, the mayor of this city. And I want to tell you, I appreciate you coming here. And I want you to know that out there in that auditorium are over 2,500 people, some of them Christians, some atheists, some agnostics, some who have never heard the Word of God. And I trust that during your talk, you'll tell them about Jesus. And a Baptist minister grabbed me very roughly and very indignantly said to me, Mayor, don't tell him what to speak. We know what we need to say. We don't need your help. And of course, all that was in Christian brotherly love. So you see that there were bad parts on both sides of that situation. But I thought Mr. McIntyre did an exemplary job. I have since had a number of contacts with him down through the years, and he sent words of greeting to me through other people here. I have had the privilege of helping him financially on a number of occasions. I don't always agree with him, but I admire a man who knows what he believes and who is willing to say so.
Why did that WHHH eventually do take them off?
Well, they've taken off most of their religious broadcasts. They're having some problems, as I understand it, right now. trying to get rid of some of the remaining religious broadcasts that they have on the air. These are not great money makers for them, and they're not, I suppose, the best kind of advertising for a radio station. I think that they still have a policy of trying to eliminate all the religious broadcasts that they can.
You said that there were selfish special interest groups that were interfering with the urban development plan.
Yes, there were. There are people who are still in this town who are big figures in this town. And because of the fact that I wouldn't go along stretching the urban renewal area, the first urban renewal program, to include their properties so that they could get exorbitant prices from the government for it, they were antagonistic against my reelection.
What did you try to do as far as urban renewal?
I did. I started the urban renewal program, and there was no urban renewal program before I came. I was so well known in the city of Chicago in the urban renewal department that they knew me by my first name. We had the first forcible program in the state of Ohio that was of any real value and real economic value. I take credit for starting that particular program and starting those wheels in our city.
Would you say you were satisfied with your administration?
Very much so. Very much so. I felt that I did a good job, best job. I feel this, and I say it without any fear of reprisal. I was the finest equipped and qualified mayor that the city has ever had. Not only was I a young man, I was a successful businessman. I also had a college education. Now, we've had both types. We've had successful businessmen, and we've had men who have been college graduates, but we never had a combination of both. I was the best qualified mayor that the city ever had, and I don't say that in boasting. I was qualified both from an educational standpoint, from a business standpoint, and from having been brought up through an era of time one had to work for what they got. And I think that I was the best qualified mayor that this city ever had, bar none.
Please turn the tape over. What do you consider your greatest accomplishments in your administration, generally speaking?
Well, I think there were a number of them. I couldn't hardly earmark any one particular one, but the public improvement programs that we started and initiated, the capital improvement programs that we initiated, the civil service programs that we initiated, all of these things helped to lay the foundation to enable Warren to be in the position that it's in today. And Warren is in an enviable position. And they're under good leadership again. Mayor Richards is doing a nice job. Muddying the water, he's pressing on and getting the job done. I think we laid the foundation for many good programs, the Urban Renewal Program, the South Street Program, the Bypass, all of these things. We lobbied for one great thing that I was always happy for. We lobbied for the law that forbid any community such as Howland or Champion or now Lordstown has been able to circumvent it. But where no city could incorporate or no community could incorporate within 3 miles of a already incorporated city. This prevented Warren from being a satellite city or being a core city with satellites around it, such as Youngstown and Cleveland. It prevented communities like Howland, who maybe without thinking would go off and organize themselves into a community, completely surround the core. Because I told these people, if you kill the core, you kill the apple. There's no way that it can survive. Look at Cleveland and the myriad of problems it has, the duplications of services. And it's bad enough with the townships around the cities. Can you think of the waste of material and manpower and equipment that there is in the townships, the overlapping of services of Howland and Champion and Liberty and Warren Township, Leavittsburg? Equipment sitting around for months at a time that cost the taxpayers thousands and thousands of dollars, whereas if they had one central city, could allocate it. The same way with fire departments, and this is a tough situation or a tough question. Every time you bring the subject up, you get much controversy. You get it from the township trustees, and they'll tell you, our fire department is just as good as the fire department of the city of Warren. And when a man in public office says this, he's either saying you're a fool and you don't understand, or I'm lying to you, because there's no way that a volunteer fire department could ever qualify to the standards of a full-time fire department. But look at the duplication of equipment as it sits hour after hour and week after week. Costly equipment. Thousands of dollars. A grade all, for instance, that they use to clean ditches with. A grade all must cost almost $100,000 today. And there's no way that a township could use one more than 3 months out of the year. And yet they'll all own one or two or three of them.
Is there any changes you would like to have made about your administration? Anything you would have done differently?
Yes, I think that if I had known then what I know now, I would have campaigned for the last election, and then possibly I would have been reelected time after time. But I also have a strong feeling, as I said to one of my friends the day after election when she voiced her sorrow that I was not in office, I said that if the God that I serve wanted me to be in public office, I would still be there. So I feel that the purpose for which I was placed in that position was accomplished. And whether I accomplished all the things that I had hoped to was beside the point. But I feel that it was for the good, and I feel that the city derived much good from it, and I know that I did. There were times when I didn't think this way, but as I mellow in age a little bit, some years have passed by, I can see the benefits of it. And were it not for that, having had that high office, I probably would not be as successful as I am today in business again. But I want to reiterate again that I'm one of the few mayors that has ever been in office here, was in business before he was in office, and remained in business after he returned to private life again here. And I've always been proud to walk up and down these streets and hold my head high, to be willing to face any man. And this is worth something.
Has the Lord ever shown you that you might want to in the future run, get involved in politics again?
No, he hasn't.
So you don't think
he hasn't? No, I don't think that. I think that I gained what the Lord wanted me to gain from it. I have been able to speak to thousands and thousands of people where I never would have had the opportunity had I not had the prestige of that office. And I'm sure that through this learning experience, we've accomplished what the Lord wanted me to accomplish.
That's why you're in there, for His will, not
yes,
what you wanted
yes,
to do.
Yes, I have no aspirations for any other public office. Not saying that I wouldn't, but at the present time, I have no.
What various activities are you involved in now?
Well, I am a associate with the Bolesweir Insurance Agency. I just merged my agency with that one in July 1st of this year.
I noticed down in your office you had a sign system for life insurance, try Jesus.
So. Yeah. I'm still in the life insurance and the general insurance business, and I'm president of this company, Telecable Incorporated, here, where we build telephone communication systems all over the country. And I'm involved in a number of rental properties and real estate developments with some other people. And then, of course, I have my farm and my boys.
We have a farm.
Yes, I live on a farm. I live on 105 acres out in Vernon Township. I've lived out there for the past 10 years, raised some horses.
Do you grow crops?
Not much, just hay and corn and stuff, feed.
But if the food keeps going the way it is, you're going to be more fortunate than most of us.
I'm going to build a commune out there.
Because you never starve to death.
No, amen.
Not like the people who live in the city who don't know how to grow food. And you're president of a
Full Gospel Businessmen's International, the Youngstown chapter. I'm president of that. I'm a past chairman of the Christian Businessmen here. I'm a member of the Gideon Society. I'm a member of Corinth Assembly of God Church. I'm not very active in religious affairs.
Is politics
and civics affairs. I'm on the board of directors of the Chamber of Commerce. And I'm trying to remove myself from all boards at the present time so that I can have some time to devote to my family and my business. I have just finished my term on the Chamber of Commerce board. I have just finished a term on the Boy Scout board and have not come up for re-election. I want to get out.
Is politics a place for Christians?
Yes, it is.
Or moral people, very
yes,
moral people?
Yes, it is. It certainly is. And there are many Christians in politics. There are many Christians in politics, Mark Hatfield and some of the rest of them, many of them that I could name that are friends of mine. But it's a tough row to hoe. It's a tough row to maintain your principles. It's why I had an idea the last time I ran for Congress that I would sponsor a bill, that if I were ever elected to Congress, I would sponsor a bill that no man could stay in public office more than 12 years. Because no matter how good a man is and how high his moral values are, he gives in a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time, and he does a favor for this one, and then he does a bigger favor for the next one, and so on. People whom he's obligated to, people who have helped him, people who, for whom it's very difficult to refuse to do something. And so consequently, by the time that most men have been in public office 12 years or more, they no longer own themselves. And that's why I would advocate that no man, from the lowest councilman to the highest senate in the United States, should ever be allowed to stay in public office more than 12 years, continuous years.
Is there anything else you'd like to say in conclusion?
No, just that I'm happy to be alive, and that I'm thankful that I know that all things work together for good for them who are called according to the purposes of God.
Thank you very much, Mr. Robert Dunstan, and God bless.